Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and of course, with me, as always, here in the Student of the Game studio, the trusty man, the right hand, the man I know as Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
Stephen Weasel Hurley across from me here, doing fantastic stuff, bringing you football talk just the way you like it in the off season that isn't, because Weasel, what we say all the time, there is no off season in this sport. This is the NFL. You know, I would make comments and jokes about how we don't do baseball here, but I wouldn't want to offend my soon-to-be guest here aboard with us on the Student of the Game. But Weasel, man, got to tell you, a lot of crazy stuff going on, just in general, despite the alleged off-season concept, a lot of talk of some unfortunate injuries in the cards, too. And actually, we had an opportunity to rub elbows a bit, or at least t-shirt to marker, at a very interesting event that we went to. We'll get into that in the back half of the show. But for now, speaking of major events, the National Gridiron Network can officially boast that we have taken a writer inside the NFL realms. That's right. The guy I'm talking to here is, of course, very esteemed as a writer in his own right. I could list every outlet that he writes for, but let's be honest, this is only an hour show, and really, that didn't take entirely too long. So, with that being said, the thing we're concentrating on here is that he's the National Gridiron Network's AFC East writer, coming to us after spending time at Dolphins minicamp last week, the 17th and 19th, none other than the man himself, Twitter handle Black Red Sox fan, Tuan Staley. What's going on, Tuan Staley?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Oh, man, hey, we're excited to do this thing here, man. This is very interesting. I think it's going to be an opportunity for myself to play more of the student role, as implied in the title of the show here, and kind of learn the kind of things that go on from camps, because I've not been to one before. Weasel, have you been to a mini camp?
I haven't been to a mini camp.
Okay, see, so, hey, I mean, we and the listeners, man, are hanging on your word, learning what the experience is. So really, just kind of on an upper level thing, I know it's the place where rookies come and they get in shape and all that, but more as an experience goes, what is, what takes place, what kind of stuff goes on at an NFL minicamp?
Well, I mean, just a lot of drills, a lot of, you know, just running the plays and, you know, just stuff like that pretty much. Some things some people may find boring, but, you know, if you like football, you know, like kind of like we do, you know, you're just kind of covering it, and these guys are kind of in shorts, really, and no pads or anything like that, so there's no hitting. So, it's, you know, that's pretty much what it is. You know, they run a few plays. Like I said, it's kind of like a vanilla type of offense and defense. They don't run every single play that they have, but they just run like a few select plays that they want to go over.
Get that foundation rolling for the offense, knock off that rust, all that other sort of happy stuff. And I got to tell you, you know, the first thing that came to mind is during the time when you would have been at the camp, I heard on the radio in terms of, you know, national news, I think it was specifically just so I could give credit because, you know, I mean, I listen to sports radio too. And particularly in the morning, I listen to Eric Cusilius because, frankly, the local Orlando talents make me want to throw things in frustration. But that's a different topic. He was talking about how there were a lot of headlines in the Miami area there that Ryan Tannehill is starting to really take more charge in the huddle and be more involved and all that sort of stuff that you hear in a sophomore quarterback. And that typical statement, so to speak, did you notice anything that would lend credence to that there during your time at the minicamp? Or what's your impression of where Ryan Tannehill is at and where he might go this season?
Well, Cassilli's probably talking about, it was a play last week where it was the first, I believe it was the Tuesday minicamp where they were indoors and one of the rookie wide receivers, it might have been Damon, I forgot who it was exactly, but it was somebody, they wasn't doing something correctly. They wasn't lined up right, and Tannehill had to call a timeout, and he pretty much let them have it. I forget exactly who it was, but it's something you didn't necessarily see in Ryan Tannehill in his first few years of the league, because really he's a young guy, so
sure,
he's going to be real hesitant to be that type of leader. And let's face it, the Dolphins really need a leader. You have Cameron Wake, who is the guy, who is the leader, who I think is, nobody questions that. But on offense, you really don't have any leaders. Mike Pouncey, I mean, you know, he's been there a while, but, you know, I don't know if anybody considers him a leader after what happened last year, the Incognito and Martin situation. No, Reggie Bush is no longer there. You don't have Jake Long. So you really need that leader. And I think this is time for somebody like Ryan Tannehill to come about and start to be more of a veteran presence on this team and take charge of the offense.
Yeah, no, and that makes a lot of sense there. And you know, I think I've always found Tannehill to be severely underappreciated due to the fact that, you know, his rookie year, he's shadowed as one of several rookie quarterbacks that shined in that 2012 year. Of course, referring to Andrew Luck, RG3, Russell Wilson. I'd say Brandon Whedon, but it's not like he shined. He was just another rookie quarterback in the mix. But you see where I'm going there. You know, he wasn't the big headliner by any stretch. Do you think, though, do we get to a point? Actually, I didn't prep to ask you this question there, Tuan Staley, but as somebody who follows the Dolphins closely, more closely than I for certain, do you think that Ryan Tannehill having a better career than RG3 is a less than remote possibility?
It's possible. I don't, like I said, I don't necessarily say that right now, but it's definitely possible. I don't, like I say, I don't know. Like I say, RG3 had a bad year last year, you know, coming off the injury, so he had a bit of a setback. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how he is going forward. I think injury concerns are his biggest issue, not necessarily playing on the field. I mean, with Tannehill, his first year that he came in, he didn't necessarily have the weapons. And kind of the second year, he got more weapons, but, you know, the offensive line kind of really failed him there. So it's really going to be interesting to see what he is going forward, because it's really, this year is the third year, and there's really no excuses, because they have weapons around him. The offensive line has improved, even though Pouncey is hurt, which I'm sure we'll get into as well. But he has really no excuses. It's the third year in the league. He needs to show something, a little bit more maturation, which he did last year. I don't think people give him credit for that either. I think a lot of guys, more specific radio guy down here, who I love the guy, but he doesn't think Tannehill's a good quarterback. And I really don't know. But this year, this is the year that we're really going to find out what he really is and going forward in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not a Dolphin fan. Heck, I live in Orlando, not Miami. So, right, according to the TV markets, I'm a Jacksonville fan, right? But no, what I'm getting to is, you know, I never really thought that Tannehill could be seen as bad at this point. And I think at the very least, you have to say pretty much what you said there, Tuan, is that the jury may still be out on Tannehill. But I don't know. For me, I actually rank it a bit higher. I'm a bit more optimistic than a lot of the Dolphin faithful, thinking that he has some opportunity, you know, to advance. But as you said, I think we do need to touch on the O-line because, you know, hey, first of all, being an O-lineman myself, of course, it's a soft spot for me to talk about the line in the first place. But moreover, you mentioned the whole Justin Martin, Richie Incognito situation, which, if nothing else, robbed the Dolphins of two starting offensive linemen, which, of course, is going to affect a sophomore quarterback who would allegedly, quote-unquote, slump. I think let me put it this way, Tuan Staley, because, you know, you can certainly answer it, like I said, better than I can as someone who follows the Dolphins more closely than I. Do you feel like any, quote-unquote, slump in Tannehill's numbers in that second year was due to that drama? And of course, factoring in the Pouncey injury that you mentioned, I think it's supposed to be out like 3 months or something like that. But have they still managed to make that O-line progress? And in your mind, what did they do to make that happen?
Well, I think if you talk about the answer to your first question, I would probably say, no, I don't think that's the case, though. But you know what? But it is what it is. I mean, he didn't have necessarily last two games. I just think he really, the offense and people around him didn't necessarily do a good job. So to answer that, I don't think the whole situation with that, you know, did him in, because I think if it did, it probably would have happened after the Tampa Bay game when they just looked completely awful. But after that game, they looked much improved. So
Right. Answer
that question, no. And what was the second one?
Well, and then what have they done to move the offensive line forward? I mean, and of course, like I said, it's difficult to factor now that we're getting the news about Pouncey and the central figure that he is in that offensive line. I mean, well, any starting center is a central figure in the offensive line. But, you know, what have they done to bolster that offensive line? And, what is it that can give us the definitive statement that the Dolphins have improved on their offensive front?
Well, they've gone out and addressed the problems. They brought in Brandon Albert, who's a Pro Bowl left tackle. You know, some people might have thought it was overpaid, but it was something that they needed. They drafted Juwan James from Tennessee. They drafted another guy, Billy Turner, from North Dakota State. They went out and also got Shelly Smith. They also got Jason Fox as well. So they dressed the line, really. So mm-hmm. it's just really about can they all come together and make it mesh as a group. So they've really improved. It's just a matter of, you know, how things are going to go forward without the anchor going forward. Now, when you're missing a all-pro center like Mike Pouncey, that's hard to replace. I mean, so I'm interested to see how they're going to replace him going forward, at least for the first few games, for the first month of the season, probably.
Well, I don't know how you could call Brandon Albert overpaid after they had Mike Wallace last year. I'm just saying. That's a different topic. Weasley, you got something?
Yeah, for 2013, Tannehill was...
You know, people say, well, the Dolphins overpaid for him. The Vikings actually offered him more money than the Dolphins. But, yeah, he turned that down to go to Miami. So, believe it or not.
So how's that going there, Vikings fan Stephen Weasel Hurley?
Yeah. Do have a question about another question about Tannehill. Now, you got 58 sacks for 2013. It was most in the Dolphins franchise, and it was number one with the NFL. So, would you say that the 58 sacks were they, in your opinion, do you say they were more Tannehill's fault, like holding the ball too long or such, or do you think most of it could be accredited to the injured offensive line?
Injured.
Yeah.
I think it was a combination. Yeah, I think it was just a combination of both. I think it was times he held the ball too long. I thought it was times where...
Is it Twan Staley? Apparently... It sounds kind of like he just got eaten by a shark or something, which is interesting because I thought he was on land.
Right, I'm back. I don't know what was going on with the connection or something, but what I was saying is I think it was a combination of both. It was a combination of, you know, Tannehill holding the ball too long. It was also the offensive line not protecting them very well, and it was also play calling as well. I think Mike Sherman didn't necessarily set him up. The former offensive coordinator set him up in the best position. Would you have a that terrible offensive line like how they had. Like, so you got to get the ball out quickly. You can't sit there and have, like, those five-step drops and hold the ball forever. So I think it was really a combination of a lot of different things. They gave up 58 sacks last year.
Okay, well, got another question for you. You have Knowshon Moreno, running back from Denver, and he's read that he's out 1 month now after his knee surgery. Do you think that's going to affect possibly making the team? So that first, and then later, your expectations for Lamar Miller?
Well, I think as far as, like, him making the team, I think he's going to make the team anyway. But I think as far as, like, you being able to cut somebody like a Daniel Thomas at this point or some of the other, you know, running backs, you're going to wait and see, you know, what he looks like coming out, you know. He has a month to recover. We'll see where he at and his progression going through camp and preseason, and then you'll make those tough decisions. So I think, like I said, I don't think it affects him as much as some of the other running backs they have on their roster. And Lamar Miller, like, he's been getting the first team reps anyway. So, like I said, we didn't know necessarily why. Knowshon Moreno came into camp overweight. You know, like I said, had a little bit belly, like he gained about 15 pounds. But now we know why. We just think they didn't disclose injuries or anything like that with us necessarily. So now we know why he might have gained weight or he wasn't out there because he was injured.
And it's looking like for Pouncey, 3 months he's going to be out. So
okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, hey, I was paying attention. Boom. No, but yeah, and I'll tell you, as somebody who is a victim of something similarly, I know I gained 40 pounds back on an appendectomy, and I'm not a professional athlete, so, you know, there's that. But... yeah, we could definitely see the source of why he might have gained weight. But give us, you know, let's take it a little bit off of the research and student path here for a minute. You got a particular story from the camp that you found interesting there for the people at large, Twan State? Like, you told us a little something there about Ryan Tannehill taking command of that undisclosed receiver. Well, it's probably safer for his credibility that he not be
disclosed. I appreciate you being the upright citizen that you are, Tuan Staley. But in that, is there any particular stories or anything like that coming out of camp that you have for us?
Well, I thought Jarvis Landry did a...
Uh-oh. I think it's the
Landry.
There he is.
Good job. I thought he definitely showed up. And he looked like the number one wide receiver in camp. Like, he was the best. He's arguably the best player in camp. So I thought that was good, to be honest with you. I thought also who looked good. I mean, like I said, some of the defensive, obviously the offensive line was a big issue as far as them not looking good. I think it was many instances where Cam Wake and Olivier Vernon really, you know, overpowered that offensive line, which is not a bad thing because Cameron Wake is one of the best defensive players in football. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, you get to go against him every day. I mean, that's obviously going to make you better. So I don't take, like I said, I don't take too much from it. And plus, it's early in camp. So I think that was the big thing. Like I said, we had a spring game last Thursday. We watched it. The offensive line really got dominated. So that was a big story. You know, Mike Wallace, you know, Dan and Tannehill's chemistry. He was looking at that. And how the team was learning a new offense, because they have a new offensive coordinator in Bill Lazor, who was the quarterback coach for the Philadelphia Eagles last year. So they were trying to learn a new offense. So like I say, it still hasn't necessarily clicked. You know, you can notice differences in the offense because they're a lot faster than what they were last year. It kind of resembles the Eagles offense a little bit, if you want to, you know, kind of a little visual image.
Sure.
So those are really the stories that are going on in camp right now. They came out of camp.
So, well, and let me ask you this. So we have all this drama in the backfield with Lamar Miller, or we don't know what's going on with him, or Daniel Thomas, who have both been, you know, disappointing specimens in their own right. Is this a situation where actually, put it this way. Do you feel like that the Dolphins will be kind of a shootout airborne style team now, basically because of that? I mean, I know they haven't had great running of late, other than some flashes from Reggie Bush a couple years back when he was still in Miami. But is this a team that's going more airborne completely, I guess I should say? Or, you know, is there any element of the running game that would actually help to balance out Tannehill? Because what I'm seeing here is we're talking about this there, Tuan, is we're creating a situation where it's entirely on the shoulders of the third-year player. Is that correct?
Well, I think they wanted to run the football. I thought that's the reason they brought in O'Shawn Moreno, to be honest with you. But, you know, he's injured, so depending on how he progresses and things like that, you know, more may be on the shoulders of Frank Tannehill. Look, they're not gonna be a run-heavy team anyway. They're going to run the ball, like I say, when they had to keep the defense honest. They have a ton of offensive weapons, like as far as receiver, and Charles Clay, who's one of the most underrated mm-hmm. tight ends in football, who a lot of people may not know about. He also made the best NFL 100 players list as well.
In the 40s,
you know, they have a array of weapons. So, like I said, they're gonna air it out anyway. It's just a matter of what that balance is going to look like. I would probably say about 65-35 anyway. But, you know, we'll see how the season goes on. But I think they want to definitely get some kind of running game going, because last year they didn't have that. Lamar Miller was very inconsistent. There were flashes of Lamar Miller. You know, he's not necessarily a good, you know, between the tackles runner. It's the reason why they went and got him, O'Shawn Moreno, in the first place.
Okay, well, let's take it over to the defensive side for a minute there, Tuan. Like, you mentioned Cameron Wake. No shock he's a leader. No shock he's overpowering youth. No shock any of that's happening. But for the rest of the defense, what are some bright spots or some concerns that you saw there at the minicamp?
Well, I think as far as like the bright spots would definitely be, you know, some of the, you know, the second year players. I would definitely say Will Davis, DeMar Taylor, definitely the cornerback, two cornerbacks they drafted last year. They look much better. They need more depth at the cornerback position. They look really good. They signed Cortland Finnegan, but I think they're gonna have him bring those guys along, and they look really good. They look, like I said, last year they were kind of injured, and you know, it's their first year, I think, with a full, you know, season and a mini camp and all that, and they look a lot more refreshed. They look like a lot more confidence is there. So I would definitely say that's a positive. Jelani Jenkins from, you know, has played at the University of Florida. He looked a lot better. You know, he gives them depth at the linebacker as well. Joe Philbin talked a lot about him in his press conferences. So, you know, he definitely looked good. As far as like the you know, the disappointing thing I had was not seeing enough of Deion Jordan, because Jordan, like I said, he was their pick last year, first round pick, and you know, you didn't see a lot of him. So I was definitely disappointed in that. But he's a lot bigger. You know, he comes in, like I say, he looks like an actual defensive end now. So that's really the big thing there. But it's just that we didn't see him get enough snaps. So I would have liked to see that a little bit more, especially when you take a player that high, you want him to have like an instant impact. I understand, you know, their D line is their specialty, and you know, they're deep at that position. But again, you have to find some ways to use him, like I said, along with Cameron Wake and Olivier Burdick, who had 11.5 sacks last year. So that was a bit disappointing thing to me.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And when you got a player that high, you aren't wanting to wait on the jury to deliberate. You're ready to see him make an impact. No, I can certainly make plenty of sense out of that. Weasley got something there.
Yeah, just wondering about their 2014 draft now. Was there any player, like you got offensive tackle Juwan James, you got Jarvis Landry, wide receiver. Was there a player that stood out from the rest that you think could is going to make it like a big time in the league? Or what do you think? Because I know they're in shorts, but sometimes someone, you know, is the star at the training camp. So.
Who's the standout rookie that you see right now at mini camp, I guess, is what you're getting
at.
It was definitely Landry. It was no question. Like, he was definitely the guy that you could say, wow, you know, he's making great catches. He has great hands. He's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's a crisp route runner. He goes up and gets the ball at the highest point. He's not a very tall guy, but yeah, he plays big, which is very, you know, no matter what height you are, if you play bigger than what you are, I mean, you just survive in this league. So, I mean, like I said, he was really the standout guy that people was like, wow, we didn't know he was that good. And, I watch SEC football every week, and I've seen a lot of LSU over the years. So, obviously, you know, saw him, and I knew he was very good. But, you know, just to see him up close and personal, you know, with your own two eyes right there, you know, you come to get a better appreciation for him.
So let me bring it this way, Tuan Staley. Like, despite the fact that you have the handle of a black Red Sox fan, which, again, I like saying it all over the place because despite the fact it alludes to baseball, it is among the most creative Twitter handles I've ever seen, I'll be honest. But as somebody who follows Miami and lives in the South Florida area there, I thought I might give you a little opportunity to leverage a bit of bragging rights and schmack here. Because when you look at the quarterback core of the AFC East, of course there's Brady, sure. But let me pop quiz. And Weasel, let me get you in on this here too after Tuan Staley answers. Is there any way that anyone else has even a contest at trying to claim to be the second best quarterback in that division?
Well, I don't know what EJ Manuel can do. So that's hard to tell with, you know, because we didn't see enough of him last year. You know, Smith, I mean, and I know the Jets didn't have weapons, but again, I'm not too fond of him. So I probably would say, yeah, this body called Tannehill is probably the second best.
Weasel.
Yeah, I agree with that. Tannehill would be the second.
It's no bad on him. I think he's better than what people give. I just don't think people give him enough credit. Either you like him or you don't. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are saying they don't like him, but I don't think we necessarily know. Like I say, this is the year we really find out about him. I just think that, like I say, there's really no excuses at this point. So I think we'll really find when this year is over, we'll know more. We'll know everything we need to know about Tannehill going forward.
Weasel?
Yeah, I can see Tannehill as the second best in the East. I think when check out in his stats and stuff, from 2012 into 2013, pretty much most of the big categories, he's improved. Like, I think he had in his rookie year, like, 12 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. And then he comes back with
13 interceptions, yeah.
And then he comes back and has 24-17. So that's better.
That's better.
Yeah.
That's the progression you want to see.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
You want to see in this league. I just think everybody wants everybody to be elite. Like, well, that word, which I absolutely hate, actually. They want everybody to be, like, top five. And if you're not in that top five, you're not very good, which I don't think that's necessarily the case. Amen. You can win in this league not being a Tom Brady or, you know, Peyton Manning. We've seen that. But it's just being efficient with the football and not making mistakes and making plays when you have to. That's really what it boils down to, at least to me. I don't know how y'all feel, but that's what it is to me.
Bro, I follow the Niners, okay? I know all about a quarterback that's good, but just because he's not top five, apparently now, you know, oh, he's overpaid and all this other stuff. In a universe where we still see Tony Romo with $55 million guaranteed. I'm just saying. Anyways, no offense to Tony Romo. I find he gets too much oppression, but $55 million guaranteed to a quarterback with a bad back is just a bad business decision. Because we've never seen those come out of Dallas. Right, Twan Staley?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Kyle makes jokes. You can laugh. It's all right. It's a light show. No. I forgot. Oh, yeah. By the way, what I wanted to say, though, is you guys completely didn't mention Thad Lewis in our discussion of AFC East quarterbacks. And I am ashamed of both of you because, no, not really. That's fine.
Hey, I should have, man. They beat the Dolphins twice last year. They beat the Dolphins like both times. So I definitely should have mentioned Thad Lewis. So. We saw more of him than E.J. Manuel. Well, I did anyway.
So, hey, man, you know, maybe you were repressing the bad memory. Perhaps that's it. I don't know. I've heard worse ideas. I'll leave it at that. So, we're wrapping up here.
Thad Lewis has really made himself into at least a good backup quarterback. You know, he can win games in this league. So,
yeah.
There's no shame in that at all. If you know if E.J. Manuel goes down, you have confidence in Thad Lewis that he can win you games in the league. And he's even better.
And he came out in his debut, took the Bengals into overtime. I mean, you know, that's what got my attention. I started watching, and then, you know, all that happened. Well, first of all, you know, the Bills defense actually showed up for once. That was interesting. And then all the O-line troubles and a lot of things that were going wrong with the Dolphins. It was basically what – it was kind of that perfect storm concept, I'll put it that way. So
yeah, the Bills have the Bills have everything around. They have a good, like I said, they have a really good defense. They have, like I said, they went out and got Sammy Watkins. They have Robert Woods. They got a good team around the wide receivers. T.J. Spiller, Fred Jackson is still there.
Look,
they just need E.J. Manuel to stay healthy and, you know, see what he can get past. So they have the team around them, much like they kind of like the Dolphins, but it's just a matter of the quarterback. It's just kind of like, you know, the quarterback. What can he do? How he can elevate them, because like I said, they definitely could be a team that could have a meteoric rise and just and possibly, you know, contend in the AFC. It's not saying to win it, but they could definitely, you know, surprise some people.
That makes perfect sense. So okay, well, we'll be wrapping up our time with you pretty soon here, Twan Staley. From 0 to 1, 100%. A lot of people are talking about playoff opportunity for the Dolphins in the upcoming season. Between 0 and 100%.
Oh, God. You're going to put me on the spot.
Hey, this is not a softball show, okay? I'm not lobbing you easy pitches. You got to work here, son.
I'm time stamping it.
Hey, we'll see. And that's
okay,
the thing,
go
though.
Ahead. Just go ahead with the question. I know what you're going to ask.
Well, right. But I will.
I hate giving predictions. So.
No, and that's cool. Because we here on the Student of the Game hate giving predictions as well. Because on this show, at least, Twan Staley, you have until September 1st to change your mind. Because that's the Monday, which would, in our case would be our show, before the season starts. So we'll give you at least that much leeway to, if you change your mind, you have until September 1st to do so. Is that cool?
Okay, that's fine.
Fair enough. 0 to 100, the percent chance of the Fins making the playoffs.
You already asked the question without me saying it, so I might as well go ahead and give you the answer. yes, I think the Patriots are going to win a division. I think everybody, that would be a consensus answer. Like I think, like I said, they've improved. I mean, Tom Brady is, you know, he wants to get that one more Super Bowl. I think they're poised. They're going to try to get it. They're going to try everything to do to get it. So Patriots are kind of pegged in the first to me. 2 to 4 could go anyway. I have no idea, honestly. But if you're making me pick now, I probably would pick the Jets simply because they finished 8-8, the favorite of the Dolphins last year, with no offense whatsoever, but a lights-out defense. So, and they've improved. Like I say, they got Jason Morrow from Texas Tech. They got to him. Decker, they like I said, they signed him. Also, like I said, they got Michael Vick, which if he can stay healthy, he can help provide an upgrade at the quarterback position. So I would go with the Jets second, you know, slightly over the Dolphins, and then I have the Bills at 4.
Well, and that's a great analysis there, Twan Staley, but the question is just going to be making the playoffs, let alone their placement in the East. The percent chance they make the playoffs in your mind?
The Dolphins?
Yeah. He's not very confident, folks.
I guess I'll have to give you 40% right now.
Ooh, 40, okay. But,
you know.
That's not terrible. I was expecting 25% at best. You drop a 40, that's a lot more optimistic than I would have expected, and we certainly won't hold you to it, because again, it is more than 2 months away from September 1st, so we will not oppress you until such time as you lock in your vote, as they say, Tuan Staley. It will be fine.
Yeah, for the preseason, and I'll probably give you a different answer.
That could very well be. There'll be a full training camp and many injuries possibly that could happen between then and now. Hopefully to as few players as possible, but this is because it's a way of life in football. But we're coming to the end of our time with you, brother. Go ahead and let the fine people know where they can find you, and also what you'll be working for on for us this coming week on the National Gridiron Network.
Well, you can find me at Black Red Sox Fan on Twitter. You can also find me at BlackRedSoxFan.com, and also, like I say, National Gridiron Network, and Okay, insiders, and you know, a bunch of other websites. But if you look up, you hook up to me on Twitter, you can find me just about everywhere. And this week we're gonna be doing more Dolphin stuff, talking about, you know, Jarvis Landry and some of the Jordan trips as well, some of the other picks for the Dolphins. So I'm gonna try to get an exclusive interview with Trips and Walt Aikens as well, the Dolphins. So we'll see how that goes.
Hey, definitely. I know I'll be looking forward to that, ladies and gentlemen. The one, the only, Antoine Staley. Thank you very much for coming in, sir.
All right, y'all take it easy.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Antoine Staley. You know, the first time, I think, well, that's not the first time we've had him on this show, but he comes pretty strong when he does. He's a writer first, a little soft-spoken, but he comes to the plate and gave us diamonds of information. And what was odd about it, Weasel, is we didn't have to go mining. They were just right there on the surface. They just told us. The diamonds are here. This is what's going on. I have to say diamonds because he likes baseball. And, well, diamonds are a girl's best friend when it comes to baseball. Boom, had to make the joke. Sorry, Twan Staley. He'll be listening to this later and be like, whatever, man. Dang it, Kyle. Anyways, with that, we're obviously already at the halfway point. Let's go ahead. We'll be back in about 30 seconds. You're listening to the National Gridiron Network.
The National Gridiron Network. Join as we tell you what is happening with your favorite team in the NFL or the NCAA. Listen in as we preview every football game, week by week, to the end of the season. Follow us at NationalGridironNetwork.com and read up on the latest that is happening across the football landscape. NGN, football talk, just the way you like it.
And we are back here on the National Gridiron Network. I am Kyle Nash, the student of the game, and across from me, throwing it down for you, Steven Weasel Hurley. Weasel Weez!
Yeah, boy!
Ready to bring it, like always. And you know, it was very interesting. Weasel, you kind of stepped up in a pretty big way this past week for me here, too. And I know it's bad radio to talk about personal stories, but it relates to football, I promise. Just hang with me. It's going to be relevant. No, but I got an email from Weasel about an hour before I got off my shift, something about the Jaguars caravan. I'm like, I'm not a Jags fan. Why do I care about this? Well, they did it right down the street from my house. So I pretty much kind of had to go, you know.
You could have walked there.
I could have. I would have been late. But, you know, you want to see some fat kid, you know, sweating in the Florida sun in office clothes, you know, once it would have just been awkward. I'm just saying. Anyways, what am I getting to? The Jaguars caravan, though, was at a local watering hole of ours that we enjoy. A branch of it, I should say, the Orlando Ale House, inevitably, right? And what was significant is there, we had an opportunity to meet up with Tony Boselli, Jaguar great. Cecil Shorts III, the receiver who we often refer to on the show as CS3. Good times all the way around.
It'll catch on. It'll catch on.
Hey, I don't care if it catches on. That's what he's known as on this show, dang it. He won't even know what I'm talking about. If he ever comes on this show, which we would love, by the way, Mr. Shorts, I'm just saying. If he ever comes on this show, I'm going to call him CS3. And there'll be an awkward silence and confusion. But then when he'll realize what's up and be like, that's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he won't. But that's not the point. So, and on top of that, we had, of course, the number 3 overall draft pick, rookie quarterback Blake Bortles, as well as 7th round draft pick Storm Johnson, both out of UCF here. So, of course, that was what the crowd was drawn in. And, of course, a quick shout out to the fans I met there, Tony and Miguel,
Both cool guys I talked to in the crowd there. Very cool guys all the way around. Just in case they're listening, there you go, Tony and Miguel. There's your shout out. Anyways, so you and I got to talking a little bit in this line, which, first of all, I've never seen anyone get a road sign autographed before. That's new for me.
Well, it's at a UCF parking or something like
well,
that.
Well, right. But I've never seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
It's very unique. And it happens to be a sign that has a white background, and markers usually come in the color black, and you can see the signature very clearly. And I don't know. I thought it was creative. I just wanted to say that in public. I'm just
that
saying.
That is, both Blake Bortles and Storm Johnson, and they autographed it, and it looks pretty nice. And but the thing about the sign is that it was put back up into our man room, so... It's definitely
our man room.
Yeah, my wife. She watches football all the time and stuff. So.
But your wife's not a man. I'm very confused.
It's called a man room.
You can see
in
why
general for sports.
Okay. Oh well, if it was sports room, maybe I don't know. I'm just giving.
Well, it is the man room though.
Man room.
Yeah.
Okay. See, that's better. When you say our man room, that's just weird. The man room. Okay, I'm feeling that.
Yep.
You know, I see where you're going there. Mm-hmm. Perhaps a bad choice of words there on my part, too. But anyways, we'll move on from that. So we got into a little bit of discussion, and actually we have a caller here, so we'll go ahead and make this part of it a little bit quicker. We'll get back to it in a second. We had a discussion that really led me to thinking, who do you think, Weasel, is set up to have the better career right now? Blake Bortles or his bitter rival during the college season in former Louisville quarterback Teddy Bridgewater?
I think hopefully for both players, they would be able to sit next season. But you were asking the who's going to do better when?
Who do you have a better? Who will have a better career? Was
career?
The question. Yeah,
I think the offensive line for Miami needs to improve because
you mean Jacksonville.
But
Miami needs to improve as well. You're right. But
I got you. I got a little sidetrack there.
That's cool. We got you.
But
you just talked to Tuan Staley. He was at Miami minicamp. That's a big deal. I'd be confused, too. It's cool.
You have Blake Bortles where he is, I would say he's kind of raw. I would say that he may need a year to.
Raw-ish?
Raw-ish, yeah. He needs to, learn more. But he's like the what you want, like size-wise and weight-wise. And
Roethlisberger-ish.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ish going on here.
So
see what I did there?
I hope he just doesn't get thrown in the fire. There's always that possibility.
Yeah.
But compared to Bridgewater, I mean, Bortles has, I mean, he's got the size of, I think, about 240, 230 when he's 6'5". And Bridgewater's about 6'1 or 6'2". So I think Blake Bortles would have a better career. He does have, some decent decent threats out there.
Marquise Lee, CS3,
yeah,
Marcellus
right.
Lewis if he stays healthy.
So, yeah, Bridgewater, he should sit too. But I got to give the edge to Bortles because it looks like he can, from what I saw last year, being a UCF season ticket holder, Bortles kind of has that thing where he makes comebacks at the end of games. He makes the throws. And he doesn't, he doesn't really, UCF won their final, I guess it was 10, 11 games or so. And I would say about half of them where they needed fourth quarter comebacks.
Well, right. Including that J.J. Horton catch, that one-handed catch against Temple. But I don't know. If you haven't seen it, look it up on YouTube. It was ridiculous. But we'll go ahead. Our caller has been waiting patiently here. And, of course, we know him very well, friend of this show, friend of this network, and just overall stand-up guy, the head of the Sports Chronicles Radio Network, Nick Ficcarelli. Nicky Fick, what's going on, man? Welcome once again. It's 2 weeks in a row, man. Good to hear from you.
I'm a bitter man. I am just a very bitter man.
Well, that was
for all those that probably have been following me for quite some time. Yesterday was probably the most brutal day that I could ever say watching an individual sports event. And that being the World Cup. 94 minutes. And the game is ours if we're about to take down the sixth best team in the world in Portugal. And then I saw it as soon as Michael Bradley gave the ball away and the passes were flowing and I saw the ball lay at the feet of the second greatest player in the world today in Cristiano Ronaldo, I was screaming at my TV, foul him, do whatever it takes. Okay, if you have to get a red card, just don't let him pass the ball or do a cross. And sure enough, poetry in motion, one of the best crosses I've ever seen. Right into a header, right into the goal, 2-2 tie. Our fate is now in the hands of Thursday's match against Germany. Oh, God help us.
Yeah, well, no, and I mean, I see that you're taking it from football to football once again, and I'm totally cool with that. It's not like this happens once every 4 years or anything, but I can make an NFL spin on this, Nick. I'm in your camp, okay? And I'm glad you mentioned this. First of all, now that you brought up the World Cup, there's two things I want to call out real quick. First of all you people on Facebook who are thinking it's funny talking about how boring soccer is, that's fine. Don't turn around in your next damn post and talk about baseball next. Because guess what? You're still doing it wrong. A. B. I'm with you on being angry. Not completely, though. I'm not disappointed like you were. I was pissed when I saw the amount of quit in that U.S. team in that 94th minute. That's right. I said it. Quit. First of all, they gave up their first damn goal with some of the most garbage, sloppy play by basically giving up their ball in front of their own net, okay? And then the other score is the U.S. going to sleep early, okay? Both garbage goals. You know what? You want to know what the NFL reference here is, Nick? I'm going Mike Singletary as a coach on these cats. I want winners. You're on the biggest damn stage, and you're doing stuff like that? I don't want to hear these apologists who are like, yay, we tied Portugal, and we could still get into the elimination round. Yay. Screw that. If you're hoping to get anywhere on the world stage, you need to be pissed about this. You should have had this locked up. You could have had, what is it? 6 points in, yeah, 6 points in group play. You could have been leading a group that included Germany, was known as the group of death, but you pissed it all away. No, I don't want to hear about, oh, we're doing so good, yay. No, that was weak, weak sauce.
Here you go.
Sir.
Can you tell me how you really feel?
No.
Wait. No, I got one better for you. Kyle, are you kidding me?
Am I? Ah, I see what you did there. That was a throwback. Well done, Nick. I didn't catch that right away.
Got a quick question for Nick. About, I guess, the world.
To end it with, are you kidding me? Anyway,
for real. There you go.
just a quick question about the World Cup.
Not but.
In the extra time for the U.S.
And the scary thing is, no, I know where Kyle was going with this, but the scary thing is we totally outplayed Portugal the whole game except for two plays. And both plays, the culprit were the same guy. Jeff Cameron.
Huh.
If there was a guy who probably wishes he had two plays back, it was the mishap clearance in the 6th minute when Portugal took the lead 1-0 and
right.
Being a step behind the striker on Ronaldo's cross, in which if you look at the replay, he stutter stepped also slightly, and that caused the separation for the header for the goal.
Well,
and
I don't want to take away from Ronaldo's cross either. That was pretty retarded. That was pretty good. I'm just saying.
It was, but what do you call the most shocking thing, though, was, again, Michael Bradley in crunch time, probably the second best player on the United States behind Clint Dempsey right now. You know, again, you know, the ball, what do you call the ball betrayed him. It was a bad touch. No, it was a bad touch, and in soccer, a bad touch can lead to a very, very, very cruel ending.
Yeah.
Soccer can be a very cruel game. You could dominate the whole game and have it snatched from you in the final second. I've been on both ends of the spectrum. I can go back to 1999 when I was a neophyte soccer fan watching Manchester United versus Bayern Munich, and Bayern Munich was about to win the Champions League. For all those that don't know, it's the best team in Europe. And Manchester United scored 2 goals in 2 minutes of stoppage time and snatched a trophy away from Bayern Munich. This is not snatching a trophy away from a team, but this is possibly a goal that will probably haunt the United States if they do not advance to the knockout stage after their match with Germany. So
this is
something that, you know, it's going to eat at the craw of all of the United States team, and it's going to eat at the craw of the United States fans.
I'll be honest. I hope I can wake the people up after you brought up European soccer, but okay. No.
Okay, so Nick, you got the World Cup where USA in the extra time they pretty much got scored.
Time, as they say.
I didn't see the game yet. I did tape it, but did the USA team during that extra time were they kind of mailing it in, or could you notice a difference in the intensity?
That's the whole thing. They did not mail it in. They actually held possession for three quarters of the time, and it looked like Portugal was on dead legs. Dead legs. They did no chance at anything. It was just one play. And like I said, soccer is an extremely cruel game. And I sat there stunned when I saw what happened. And then I fumed. Then I almost took my shoe and threw it at the TV, but I calmed myself down.
Self-control got the better of me.
but I was walking upstairs, and I had to look like I just lost a puppy.
Yeah. Well,
it felt more like a loss than it did a tie, because I was like, great, now we got to play Germany.
You know,
now we got to hope that we can actually win or tie, which is a possibility, albeit a minute possibility.
Well,
look,
yeah,
I will be screaming hoarse for the United States to beat Germany, but you're talking about the class of the group. But there's hope. There's hope. After what Ghana did, it probably set up the blueprint for the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So we shall see what happens.
Well, as far as balls that could have been taken back, Miller opening fire on a net and having it blocked by a defender, that changed the game as well, too. I think that's worth mentioning as well. Weasel, what do you got?
All right. One more thing with the actual points scored. You got Germany and the U.S. If they tie, which they could both, the coaches could say, hey, nobody scores this game.
Collusion.
We're both in. But so it's a tie or win that the U.S. needs. So,
well, that's what they need to lock it up, correct?
Yeah.
And if they don't get that, there could still be it basically will fall to goal differential.
Yeah, well, I will give everybody the scenarios right now in not too excruciating detail before Kyle like starts drooling while he's sleeping. One,
what?
United States wins. The United States wins. They win the group. They play the second place team in Group H. United States ties. Germany wins the group. United States advances. However, they're going to end up playing Belgium, which is not that great of a proposition in the first knockout stage. United States loses. Portugal wins. United States advances based on goal differential, because Portugal still right now is at -4. So, and the United States are right now at +1. So unless Portugal wins 5-0 or greater, United States gets blown out, I don't see that happening. Here's where it gets ugly. United States loses. Ghana wins. Then after that, it goes to goal differential. They might tie on goal differential. If they tie on goal differential, it goes to goal scored. If it goes to goal scored, they might stay tied again, and then it goes. Then it finally goes head to head with the United States, where the United States may advance to the will advance to the knockout round.
So basically,
only way the United States gets knocked out. Only way United States really gets knocked out is if Germany hammers us to a bloody end, and Ghana wins. Or Portugal wins by more than, like, whatever. So, I mean, I have faith, but you know, deep down in the sick gut feeling that, you know, yeah, should have been over.
Hey, man, exactly. Have faith all you want. We should have had science and math on our side, having a commanding six points in the group. I'm just saying, because, you know, for those who don't know, 3 points for a win, 1 point for a draw, blah, blah, blah. You know, but and in hearing all your scenarios, basically what it comes to is this, Nikki Fick, and this is the point I wanted to make for those who don't know. It's a completely true and possible occurrence that may take place that Ghana could still advance despite the fact we beat them head-to-head. Sir, flawed system. It rivals the BSC. I'm just saying.
BSC. Wasn't that some sort of like thing that was of yesteryear that, you know, took place in college football and that thing?
Indeed it is. But that we must thing. Remember history or else we'll be doomed to repeat it, Nikki Fick. That's all I'm saying.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for allowing me to slightly vent on your show when it comes to World Cup soccer. That's why this game, the title is actually called Student of the Game, so they talk football and football.
That's right. It's just a spell check gone wrong sometimes. That's all it is. It's all right, man. And hey, like we said last week, it makes a lot more sense stepping in here than stepping on to, you know, the racetrack Fan for Racing. Although Root for Sports is a good show, too. Don't get me wrong. But anyways, Nikki Fick, tell the people where they can find you.
People can find me on Twitter at NAF_TSCRN. And you can listen to me sometimes here on the Student of the Game as a surprise guest or many of the other shows that are taking place on both the National Gridiron Network and the Sports Chronicles Radio Network. Although my return to the airwaves may be happening sooner rather than later, but we shall see.
A treat for us all, absolutely, here, too. And, hey, if nothing else, you know, you want to hear more soccer, definitely go to the Sports Chronicles Radio Network on Saturday and Sunday night. They have Phil Nakely waxing poetic, in the words of Nikki Ficcarelli, in reference to soccer. Not a bad bit of knowledge right there. A lot of quality guests and good writers there as well. So go ahead and check that out on the Sports Chronicles Radio Network. But in the meantime, until next time, Nick, take care, man.
Class, for me, at least, is over.
Hey, I'm just sending you to the principal's office. Anyway, there's Nick Ficcarelli. So, yeah, there you go. That's a lot more soccer than I meant to talk, but hey, that is what it is. I mean, other than the whole, look, I wanted a chance to channel Mike Singletary. And look, I don't care who you are. And actually, this goes into a question I want to ask you to close the show, too, here. That's another philosophical question. How are you supposed to change a culture of a team with the, yay, we tied approach? Now, I don't know, man. You tell me what you think. And it was one thing when, I think is his name, the USA coach made a statement about he doesn't expect to win the World Cup, right? I don't know that that's a good thing for a coach to say in itself. But the fact that we as a nation, as a fan base, is all like, yay, we tied, you know, especially after the result that was, the disappointment that took place, the slacker-ass play that went down. I mean, Nick says they dominated most of the stoppage time. I wouldn't go that far. They had some moments where a player or two would do something aggressive, where they were even attacking at some points in stoppage time, which in itself is amazing. But for the most part, and I have my dad as a witness, I'm shouting at the TV, challenge them! Playing that prevent defense is always a good idea. Not. See how football and football have their similarities?
Oh, I like the tie in there.
Yeah, I thought you'd dig that.
Yeah.
So anyways, I mean, look, when it comes to it, man, it's all the same. And being aggressive, I mean, there's such a thing as being overly aggressive, obviously. But, I mean, sitting back and letting fate choose is how the result of that game occurs, bottom line. Anyways, we'll leave it with that and moving on from that. Something I saw that caught my eye because, well, it's Percy Harvin. And I know he's your boy, Weasel. You dig him.
Word.
You dug him better in purple, but I think he's just led to have more success in Seattle. Just because better surrounding standards, you know.
The thing that was kind of weird about Percy last year is that I think for about, I'd say about 80% of the season, 85, something like that.
Arguably 90, more, but
80, 90% of the season, he was injured. And yeah. I think the migraines aren't bothering him anymore, so that's a good thing. But he pretty much, you know, he got a pretty good contract from the Seahawks.
Absolutely.
So people are, you know, maybe like saying, we want him to do something. Come on. So the guy goes to the Super Bowl and runs back a kickoff for return for a touchdown. All is forgiven.
Well, I mean, and you mentioned it was a there was another return for off of a kick that took place during the season, one of few appearances he had in the regular season, which of course was against his old team, your team, the Minnesota Vikings. I thought that was if people keep talking about how, oh, it's just another game for these cats to get traded. I think that's proof that that is the biggest bunch of bunk I've heard in my life. But more specifically, and I want to hear your philosophy on this, Weasel, because it's something that I'm struggling to weigh with philosophically, right? The Seattle Seahawks have announced that they're going to hold Harvin out of camp. So, I mean, he's not going to participate. Obviously, you know, he's gotten his bell rung some. Injury has been an issue. Do you feel like that's the right move for the Seahawks to make?
I don't know his current health status right now, mm-hmm. but I think with all the things they had last year where you didn't have this electrifying guy playing and helping you out in the regular season. So there's possibility where you can get you could have a freak injury in training camp. And I would say that holding him out, I understand it. It's not the kind of usually you would want a player, you know, to, you know, give it their all. Help the team, help the younger guys. But in this case, I can't blame him because I'll mention Cordell Patterson too.
Cordero Patterson, absolutely.
It's you touch the ball, maybe it could be a touchdown now. there's not many players like that, but Cordell Patterson, he is in the he was actually kind of picked as the quote unquote replacement for Harvin.
Absolutely,
and both of them are electrifying players.
Yeah, and so, I mean, Cordero Patterson, it's funny how close that the Vikings' Cordero Patterson is to the now Seahawks' Percy Harvin in their build, their speed, their 40 times. Cordero Patterson is just bigger. And I think you said it right where every time they touch the ball is touchdown potential. So, yeah, no, that's some legitimate stuff there too. It sounds to me like you gave an element of a Chris Rock defense there. I don't know if I do it, but I understand. Yeah. That pretty much what just happened there, right?
Pretty much. he'll know the play. I'm sure he knows the playbook.
Sure.
And his routes, I don't think they do any, like, they do, like, you know, kind of a special running plays for him. You know, a lot of times it's an end around, and you hand him the ball, have him run, and lots of times he gets big gains.
See you bye.
So, yeah.
Screen passes and the like. No, and if you have Percy Harvin, that is precisely what you should do. If you have Cordero Patterson, that is precisely what you should do. Of course, the problem is all the defenders are already crammed in the box waiting for Adrian Peterson to scar you. So maybe that's not the best play call. Anyways, though, we are coming down to that 2.5 minute mark here in the show. Of course, we had Tuan Staley on earlier talking about minicamp. That was great. Thank you to him for showing up. That was ultra cool. We talked a little bit about the Jags and their caravan, which, frankly, them doing that caravan throughout the state to raise up height and try to get season ticket holders and interest involved, I got to admit, that's a pretty good idea. And the credit has to go to the owner. So I have to give him credit right now. Shaz Khan, that was a fantastic idea. There you go. Any excuse to do the con vibe is a good one. Hey. I'm just saying. I don't know. Anyways, but for all the people thinking that the Jags
90 seconds
don't do necessarily well in selling out games, a new idea they're coming up with is basically poolside football. That's right, cabana seats for the shockingly low price of $12,500, you can get 250 people into a cabana side environment where I believe it's all you can eat and drink, as well as poolside, awesome lifeguards, the full equipment, all going on there. Very interesting idea. Have a minute, Weasel. Really quick. Good idea, bad idea?
What, they have in the pool?
60 seconds.
Poolside seats, that's right.
Yeah, sure, why not?
There you go.
Have a lifeguard, though.
Yeah, well, and they did. I just said they did. So, hey, we're all set there.
Next week, though, got to mention the Jags' big screen.
Yeah, well,
I think screens on both sides.
Okay, there you go. So they're upgrading their stadium a lot. At any rate, you can find me on Twitter at the SOTG. Find Weasel Weeze.
Yeah, boy.
At Weasel the SOTG. And of course, check out the website, nationalgridironnetwork.com. Excuse me, NGSCsports.com. Boom. There you go. One more time, big shout out to Tuan Staley for coming on. Thank you as well to Nikki Fick of the Sports Chronicles Radio Network. But until next time, friends, class dismissed.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye. 10 seconds.
Like Nick called during the first half, and he eventually went off the switchboard. And then I texted him during the 30-second break. That's why I was doing my phone. He's like, "You can call it now if you want." He's like, "Thought the show was over." Like an idiot. He called the same time last week. What are you talking about?
Pretty much, yeah. Where's he at?
He is in New York, so it's not a different time zone. Good thinking, though.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can do it, sometimes I can't. Right now, I'm not that confident.
Did you say the word oppressed to that guy? I think you did.
Well, don't stop overthinking it.
It was funny, though. I think he's black.
You're an asshole. And yes, I did.
Good choice of words, Kyle.
Nick.
No, completely different guy. This is a matter that really doesn't, I mean, it's for another show host that you probably never heard of.
Okay. Oh, did you hear about the screen sizes, though?
The who?
The screens for the Jags.
I was at the same event you were.
Yeah. let's
see. Oh. Thank you, Monday.
I mean, for me, big screens, I mean, oh, look, someone else is trying to do a big screen. Shit's been done. Cabana seats? Fucking Christ, that's new.